Thank you for joining me. I'm Kimberly Rogers, and you're listening to this week's Torah portion from Friday sundown to Saturday sundown. This message is brought to you by themessianicmessage.com. themessianicmessage.com. I hope that you enjoy this teaching. This week's Torah portion is Devarim. It is Deuteronomy chapter 1, starting at verse 1, going to Deuteronomy chapter 3, verse 22. Isaiah 1, verses 1 to 27 is the Haftarah, and the Brit Hadashah is Acts chapter 9, verses 1 to 21. Before we get started, let's say a word of prayer. Baruch atah Yahweh Eloheinu Melakam. Blessed are you, O Lord our God. You are the King of the universe, the Creator of all things. I thank you and praise you for your Shabbats, for your word, for your people, for the land. We love your land, and we want to be brought back to your land like these people in this Torah portion, Abba. We want to come home. I pray that you will regather the exiles and restore us back to the land. We've been gone for 2,700 plus years. I thank you, Abba, that you have a plan and you're working your plan. We can see it every day. I just pray that you will bless your people, protect us, provide for us. You are our King, our God, our Messiah, Savior and Redeemer. We thank you and praise you. I pray, Abba, that you would guide me in the teaching, that you would have your people lay it on their hearts to study and to verify what I say. I also pray that you would prevent anything that I say from blossoming in anyone's mind or heart, that only what comes forth from you would the seed would start to grow and a plant would come forth and it would blossom. Only what is from you, Abba. I thank you, my King. I praise you, Yeshua. I give you all the glory and honor, for yours is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Amen. Okay, Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 1 continues from where the last Torah portion in Numbers just left off. Moses is going to start to address the people because he is preparing himself to die. It says here in verse 2 that it is an 11 days journey from Horeb to Kadesh Barnea by way of Mount Seir. And you know that they have been dealing with that area going around Mount Seir. Well, now it says it was not until the first day of the 11th month of the 40th year that Moses addressed the Israelites just as the Lord had instructed him to do. So Moses has only a few weeks. This is the beginning of the 11th month. There's 30 days. And then there's the 12th month. That's another 30 days. And as we get closer to Moses' death, we can see just about how long it has taken him to prepare the people, because on the first day of the first month, they're going to start into the Passover season, and by the time they get across the Jordan, they are going to be ready to keep Passover on the 14th day of the month. So we know that Moses is just about ready to die. Well, if he's ready to die now, and it's the first of the 11th month, and the people mourned Moses for 30 days, then he's got about a month left to live. Some rabbis say that Moses actually took about 6 weeks to prepare the people. I think it had to have been a little bit shy of that, because when they got across Jordan, they had to have time to get circumcised for Passover. So between a month and 5 weeks probably is about how much time he's got to live and how much time it is going to take him to prepare the people, since it says in Deuteronomy chapter 34 verse 8 that the people mourned Moses for 30 days. So what is he doing here? Well, you know, when we start to learn the Torah, we begin to realize that the history is important. Down here at the end of days, we have 6,000 years of history that we need to understand. These people don't have that. They have about 2,000 years of history that they need to understand. And here, Moses is going to give them the history of just the last 40 years. And it's important for us to understand the history, to understand how we got to where we are, so that we will learn from that and not do that again. Moses is teaching the children of Israel what they've been through for the last 40 years, even though some of them have been through all of it, part of it, or almost none of it, depending upon how old they are. They have to review this. There's that old axiom is that if you don't know your history, that you are bound to repeat it. Well, we're going to be going into the land now, and we don't want to repeat the mistakes of the first generation that is now all passed away, except for just a few of them, like Eleazar, Phinehas, Moses, Joshua, Caleb, maybe some others that we can think of that have been mentioned in the scriptures. So we're going to do what he says here in Deuteronomy 1:7. The people are going to move on. He says in verse 6, "The Lord our God spoke to us at Horeb and said, 'You have stayed in the area of this mountain long enough. Get up now, resume your journey. You're going to head for the Amorite hill country, all its areas, including the arid country, the highlands, the Shephelah, the Negev, the coastal plains, all of Canaan and Lebanon, as far as the great river that is the Euphrates.'" What he's telling them is that you're going to resume your journey, and you are going to, obviously, we're going to go and occupy all of these places. That's not going to happen all at once, but this is the expectation that after 40 years of being stopped in the wilderness, that the children of Israel are now ready to take their heritage. They are ready to come out of exile. You know, they were in exile while they were traveling and doing what the Lord told them to do, coming out of Egypt, going across the Red Sea, going along, and even during all of their murmurings, they were not yet in exile. But after the report of the 10 spies and them believing what the 10 spies had to say about the land, they were exiled. So there's a redemption, another redemption, another deliverance going on here. And he says, look, I have already given the land to you. So he's going to now do another deliverance. They're going to cross the Jordan, as you know, in the book of Joshua, and the water is going to part like it did at the Red Sea. They're going to be baptized by going through the water again. And they're supposed to understand that the land is already given to them. The land had already been given to their ancestors 40 years ago, to their parents and grandparents. But they didn't believe it. They didn't believe the Lord, and so they had to spend that 40 years in the wilderness. And he says, so now go occupy the territory that I, the Lord, promised to give to your ancestors, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and to their descendants. Now, you see, the reason that the Lord keeps his promise here is that he made a promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The promise was to their descendants, but the promise was for Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and the Lord has to keep his promises. So he says, I also said to you at that time, I am no longer able to sustain you by myself. The Lord your God has increased your population to the point that you are now as numerous as the very stars of the sky. Indeed, may the Lord, the God of your ancestors, make you 1,000 times more numerous than you are now, blessing you just as he said he would. You know, the promise to Abraham was that his descendants would be as numerous as the stars of the sky. Later on, the promise is that the descendants will be as numerous as the sands of the sea. I just had Sue Wyatt on the Cup of Shebrews show, and she was on with me and Teresa and Valerie, and we were discussing the ancestors and the importance of knowing our ancestors and of our genealogy. I, for a long time, did not understand why it's so important for me to know my ancestral lines. I knew who my mom and dad were. I knew some things about my grandparents, practically nothing about my great-grandparents, just some small anecdotes, and then beyond that, who knows? Well, the Lord laid on my heart in 2010 that I was supposed to go and look at my genealogy. And at first, I thought it was just coming from me, something to distract me from doing, you know, Beast Watch and doing the Torah portions and all the other things that I was doing. But then I began to feel the angst, and the Lord was laying it on my heart to go find my ancestors. It took me a while before I realized that the Lord was getting me to adhere to a genealogy. We don't inherit the kingdom because of our ancestors. We inherit the kingdom because of the decision we make, whether we're from the house of Judah or the house of Israel. It's all about the adoption, you see. There are many Jews in the world who have not made the decision to serve God, and if they don't make that decision to serve God, then they won't be in the kingdom. Just because you're a natural branch doesn't mean anything unless you make the decision to go ahead and obey Him. We see this through the scriptures. We see it for, let's talk about Eli and his sons. Eli, the high priest, had two sons. They were Levites, but they did not inherit the kingdom because they died in their sins. So you can be doing the right things according to the outward, but you have to make that inward decision. I know many Jews who have made that inward decision. I know many Christians and Hebrews who have made that decision. And I know many who have not. But what the Lord is telling us about our ancestors is very important at the end of days, because not only is He connecting us to the way that He lists His people in genealogies from Genesis to Revelation, He is asking us to begin to recognize that the promise He made to Abraham has been fulfilled in the end of days. That promise to Abraham was that he would bless all the families of the earth, or all the families of the earth would be blessed by Abraham. When we do our genealogical line, we can actually begin to see, and if you get online and you start doing this, not only doing your own, you will see that, oh my goodness, there are millions of people all over the earth, in the Middle East, in Europe, in the North American continent, in Australia, on the Indian and Asian continents, in Africa, wherever they are, Antarctica and the Arctic, you will see, in South America, that the Lord has blessed every family of the earth with Hebrew DNA. That is telling us something very significant. We can only see that that has happened in the end of days, because we are only now able to search that many families and to search the DNA and to realize the number of surnames of people all over the earth that have been blessed by Abraham, and that now we're not only as numerous as the very stars of the sky, but we are as numerous as the sand of the sea. So what this is telling you and telling me is that our Father, our God, our Redeemer and Savior is able to keep His promise. And this should be very heartening to us as we go into the Great Tribulation. I can tell you it certainly did something for me, knowing that my ancestors came from Hebrew lines. They actually came from Judah, probably Levi and Gad, and possibly Reuben. So it did something to me to realize that physically I am probably a Hebrew. And that on top of that, I have made the decision that I want to live my life in such a way that I am the image of Yeshua. So it's a double blessing to me. We get the double portion by understanding these things. Now Moses begins to explain to the people that he was not able to bear the judgment and the burden of all of their complaints, their hardships and their strifes and so forth. And he set up a government according to how the Lord had him to do that, which was to place honorable men over them in groups of thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. And so they got a government that they are now going to rededicate. Now, he instructed them, it says in verse 19, that we then left Horeb and passed through all that immense forbidding wilderness that you saw on the way to the Amorite hill country as the Lord our God had commanded us to do, finally arriving at Kadesh Barnea. Then I said, you have come to the Amorite hill country which the Lord our God is about to give us. Look, he has placed the land in front of you. Go up, take possession of it, just as the Lord, the God of your ancestors, said to do. Do not be afraid or discouraged. So all of you approached me and said, let's send some men ahead of us to scout out the land and bring us back word as to how we should attack it and what the cities are like there. And he says in verse 23, I thought this was a good idea. Well, you know, Moses had gotten a little off track. He had struck the rock twice, and that was in disobedience that he did that. And he was going to be punished for doing that. You know, when you're out of whack spiritually, you can make a bad decision. And thinking that it would be a good idea for the people to go into the land to look around and then come back with a report about how they should attack the land and the cities there was a bad idea. It was not a good idea, as Moses found out. You see, when the Lord leads us into battle, he's already got the battle plan. All we have to do is follow him. We don't have to figure out how it's done. We don't have to go look at the land and scout it out. We don't have to come back with any kind of reconnaissance reports or anything like that. We just need to be obedient. Well, what happened was, when they came back, they said, we don't want to go. You know, there's too many big things in there, too many ways that we can get into trouble in there. You know, they're bigger than us. They're more numerous than us. The Nephilim are in there. They have great cities that appear to be as high as heaven itself. So they complained and murmured among themselves, and they got destroyed for their murmuring and complaining. And the Lord said that what they were doing in that murmuring and complaining was that they were committing idolatry. So let's reveal how they are committing idolatry. The rebellion of the 10 spies said that the nations of Canaan were strong, that their cities went up to heaven, that the Nephilim were there. Well, when they said that the nations of Canaan were strong, they meant that they believed they were stronger than the Lord. They said the Nephilim were in there. Now, the Nephilim are a mysterious blend of human and supernatural parents who proclaim themselves to be gods. And again, the people were saying that they are stronger than Yahweh. So they're committing idolatry. Any time that our heart tells us that our God, our Father, Yehovah, is not able to go before us and to take care of our enemies, we are committing idolatry. But now, let's go to read the portion where we learn that what the Lord thinks they're doing there is committing idolatry. It happens to be in Numbers 15, which is the chapter right after the 10 spies incident. He says, if you have erred, they erred, and have not observed all the commandments which the Lord has spoken to Moses, and all that the Lord has commanded you by the hand of Moses, from the day that the Lord commanded Moses and henceforth among your generations. Then it shall be, if you commit these by ignorance without the knowledge of the congregation, then all the congregation shall bring a bullock for a burnt offering, and the meat offering, a drink offering, and one kid of the goats for a sin offering. And it goes on to explain that the priest will make this atonement. These are for the soul that sins ignorantly. But let us read what it says about the deliberate sin. In verse 30 it says, "But the person who acts defiantly, whether native-born or a resident foreigner, insults the Lord. That person must be cut off from among his people, because he has despised the word of the Lord and has broken his commandment. That person must be completely cut off. His iniquity will be on him." So that's what happened to the 10 spies. They insulted the Lord and they got themselves cut off from the Lord and from the land. So, okay, right after the spies did their thing, the Lord said, this is how you're going to act when you get into the land. You're not going to do this. You're going to do these kind of offerings for sins of ignorance, and this is what's going to happen when there is a deliberate sin, ma'al sin, against me. This is a repeat of what we have learned in the beginning of Numbers when he talks about the sins of ignorance and the offerings for that and so forth. He's repeating it after the 10 spies and telling the children of Israel, this next generation, that you're not going to do this when you get into the land. But how does that mean that they were idolaters? Well, let's go to chapter 14 of Numbers and go to verse 32. And before we go on, I want to say that this came from a friend of mine, Bob Parham, who showed us this when we were studying at our Midrash. It was something that I had not seen before or had taken into consideration before, so I want to thank Bob for this insight here. So in 14, Numbers 32, and I'm reading from the Net Bible, it says, "But as for you, your dead bodies will fall in the wilderness, and your children will wander in the wilderness 40 years and suffer for your unfaithfulness until your dead bodies lie finished in the wilderness." Now, that's in the Net Bible. In the King James, it says, "And they will bear your whoredoms." What is that word there? Well, that word there is zenuth. It is Strong's 2184, and it literally means adultery, infidelity, idolatry, whoredom, and even today, the modern Hebrew word for prostitute is zenuth. The Lord said that those 10 spies and those people who were in favor of the 10 spies' reports were idolaters. That tells me that when you reject the land, when you say Israel is defiled, Jerusalem is defiled, the people are defiled, it's an evil government, and you're not supposed to go there, like some in the Hebrew roots communities doing worldwide, by the way, I get these reports on my Facebook page of people saying, don't go there. You know, go out, go over here and, you know, do your feasts over here. Don't go to Jerusalem to do those feasts because it's defiled. When they say that, they're committing idolatry. They're committing the same sin as the 10 spies. You know, we get cut off because of idolatry. Continue reading from the book of Deuteronomy forward, and you will see that when he turns them out of the land and sends them into exile, they're in exile because of their idolatry. In order to get out of exile, we have to turn our face back to Israel, back to the land, back to the people, back to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, back to Jerusalem, where he said his eyes and his heart and his name are forever. We have to turn ourselves back. That's how you stop being idolatrous. You see, today, idolatry is this spiritualized, anything that you put before God, that's your idol. I've heard it said that somebody who studies the Bible too much, they've made the Bible an idol. You know, they're doing too much for the congregation. That's idolatry. They've turned their heart to idol. Can you really? I mean, I literally have been told this in person that those things are idolatry. To study the Bible too much. To do too much for the congregation. Are you really going to tell me that to love Jerusalem is to be idolatrous? Well, we've got to turn the church's definition of idolatry around and learn what it really means to be idolatrous. It is not the spiritualized definition that everybody thinks it is. Let's go to Ezekiel chapter 14 and start at verse 1. It says, "Then some men came from Israel's elders to me and sat down in front of me. The word of the Lord came to me, 'Son of man, these men have erected their idols in their hearts and placed the obstacle leading to their iniquity right before their faces. Should I really allow them to seek me?'" You see, what he's talking about here are that these are men that came from the house of Israel that had been exiled 100 years before Ezekiel was even born. So this, who knows how many years later this is, 150 years after their exile, 160 years, 200 years after their exile, who knows how long after Ezekiel was born to the time of Israel's elders coming to him, that they came to seek the Lord. They wanted to inquire of the Lord, and this they've done a couple of times in the book of Ezekiel. And the Lord has something to say to them about the idolatry that's in their heart. Here is what is idolatry of the heart. Here's the definition of it. The definition comes right out of the house of Israel itself. These men are in exile. I think they're so obtuse, they don't even know what they've done. They don't even realize the exile that they're in. They just think it's some kind of normal, ordinary punishment, and they still have a relationship with the Lord in which they can go back and just, you know, inquire of Him. But their idolatry is in their heart. What is their idolatry? That they continue erecting and worshiping images. They continue involving themselves in images that demons attach themselves to, and they bow and worship to them. Now, next week I'm going to talk a little bit more about images. Because, you know, the Lord said, don't make images. You can't bow and worship something if you have not made it. And I'm going to go into greater detail about images, and I hope that you won't not listen, because it's a really tough teaching. It's something that people really have a hard time with. But you see, idolatry is a soil. Let me explain to you what I mean by that. We can't say that all sins are idolatrous, but we also cannot say that all sin is not idolatry. Are you catching me? That's because idolatry is the soil from which sins grow. Sins are like plants, and their roots are in the soil of idolatry. They're in the soil of mistrust of God, disobedience of God, complaining against God, being mean and mean-spirited to our brethren, which is a sin against God, because when you treat someone poorly, you're actually having a problem with God, as we've seen in other Torah portions. I've explained that. When you commit adultery, when you commit murder, when you steal, it's because you're planted in idolatrous soil, and idolatrous soil means that you despise the land, you despise the word, you despise the commandments, you despise everything about the Lord. Now, I know that's tough to take, because I know people who believe that they love the Lord, but they're committing idolatry and they don't even know it. And I think that's where these guys are. You know, there were several hundred years from the time that Jeroboam set up the golden calves in Bethel and Tel Dan and told the people, don't go to Jerusalem for the feasts anymore, because he wanted to split the kingdom and he wanted to be the king and have them come to him and worship him. There was several hundred years from then until they even got exiled into Assyria. But there's so many generations later now. These men probably don't even know that they're committing idolatry in their hearts, because those idols that they worship are erected in their hearts. The ideologies and the religious practices of those idols are erected in their hearts. That is what idolatry of the heart is. Idolatry of the heart is, you know, is the Christmas. It says, but I do Christmas because I love Jesus. I do Easter because I love Jesus and I want to worship and honor him. That is idolatry of the heart. The heart is the soil, and the soil is idolatrous, and it produces bad plants, and those bad plants produce bad fruit. Good soil, Torah soil, that loves the land, loves the Lord, loves Messiah, loves Jerusalem, loves God's people, and loves all the Gentiles just the way Yeshua did, that is good soil. And that soil produces good plants and good fruit. So that's why Moses is recounting for these people that what their journey was. Their journey came from what their parents and grandparents took them through. We read last week in the Torah portion about the 42 places in the wilderness. Some of those were actual places, but a lot of them were not places. They were events that happened. And so they got to experience and be told about this history of the events. You know, Moses didn't have to say at this place such and such happened. All he had to do was say, we went to this place, and then we went to this place, and they knew what happened. But here he is explaining to them about the idolatry of their forefathers. And he's telling them, when you get into the land, you're not to do this. Because the Lord said at Kadesh Barnea, in Deuteronomy 1:35, in Moses' retelling of this, not a single person of this evil generation, this Zanuth whoring generation, this generation of idolaters, none of them will see the good land that I promised to give to your ancestors, except Caleb and Joshua. And he tells them in verse 39, your infants that you thought would die on the way, and your children, who as yet do not know good from bad, will go there. They will go to the land, and I will give them the land, and they will possess it. And, you know, by the way, in verse 38, Joshua, son of Nun, will be there. And of course, Caleb, as I mentioned, you know, he's going to enable Israel to inherit the land. But as for you, he's talking to this first generation, turn back and head for the desert, by the way, to the Red Sea. Now, as you know, Korah later came along very shortly after this, and he wanted to not only go back to Egypt, but if he had been successful, he would have led those people along the western side of the Red Sea, right through the Philistine country, which is the way the Lord said, we don't want to go that way because there's going to be war, and they would have been destroyed. You see, Korah would have led them into more destruction, because there would not have been a Red Sea crossing, you know, going back the other direction, you see. So that's when, in verse 41, they responded and said, we have sinned against the Lord. Yeah. We will now go up and fight as the Lord our God has told us to do. So you put on your battle gear and prepared to go to the hill country. But the Lord told me, tell them this, do not go up and fight, because I will not be with you, and you will be defeated by your enemies. I spoke to you, but you did not listen. Instead, you rebelled. This generation constantly rebelled against the Lord and recklessly went up to the hill country. So now they're not only not going to get to go to the promised land, they're going to have to wander for 40 more years so that they can all die. But now they're giving themselves a head start on getting rid of all that first generation because they were struck down by the Amorites. And they lost a lot of people in that war. So they came back and wept before the Lord, but he paid no attention to them. See, this is the thing that really my heart just aches for my brethren who among us, and not just in local areas, but all over the earth, are so anti-Semitic. We think that anti-Semitism is just, you know, we hate the Jews. Anti-Semitism is we despise Shem because that's where the Shemites, the Semites, are from Shem. We despise Shem, therefore we despise Abraham. We despise the promises that God gave to Abraham. And by the way, since we despise those promises, that means that we despise God himself. We've got too narrow a definition of what anti-Semitism is among us. And we've got the wrong definition of what idolatry is, and we don't realize that anti-Semitism and idolatry are the same sin. That's the idolatry of the heart. It's the hatred that goes all the way back to the promises that God made to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. When we say anything negative about the land, when we say anything negative about the people, we are committing the sin of these 10 spies. And the Lord called them whores. We must stop. We must stop. Chapter 2, in verse 8, Moses says that the Lord turned them away from areas like Mount Seir because he said, I have given the land of Seir, the land of Edom, to Esau. He says that in verse 5. Don't be hostile toward them, for I have given Mount Seir as an inheritance for Esau. You may purchase food to eat and water to drink from them. See, and Esau, the Edomites will be killed because they will not be kind to their brethren. Boy, talk about the lesson of the weightier matter. Right there it is. Kindness to your brethren. The Lord doesn't really care if your heart likes the person. Yeah, you know, he says don't hate somebody in your heart, of course. So we really shouldn't have that in there. But what if you do have an emotion that says, you know, I really don't like those people, but you just go ahead and you be kind to them and you help them and you do whatever you can for them. Guess what? That's a superficial feeling and you're actually fulfilling the commandment because deep in your heart, your love for them is coming because you love the Lord and you're just going to be kind to somebody who you may not personally have a like for or an interest in. That's the weightier matter. And that issue there with Esau showed us the bad side of the weightier matter, that, you know, the unkindness. And so then we get down here to the Amorites. I'm sorry, not the Amorites, the Moabites, where the Lord says, don't provoke them, for I will not give you any of their land as your territory. This is because I have given Ar to the descendants of Lot as their possession. And he says, you know, the Horites, in verse 12, lived in Seir, but the descendants of Esau dispossessed and destroyed them and settled in their place, just as Israel did to the land it came to possess, the land the Lord gave them. And so what the Lord is telling us here is that there's certain land that he is giving them to possess at this time. Now, we do eventually, at the end of days, all of God's people will be in those areas of Edom and Moab and so forth. But we need to understand that the Lord, before the kingdom gets set up, has other people placed in his area in his land, Greater Israel, and they're there for a reason. At the end of the Great Tribulation, there's going to be great destruction of the people that is there. And all of that land is going to revert to Yeshua's kingdom. And any of the people of the Moabites and the Edomites and so forth that are there, that happen to maybe escape that sword, will become part of Yeshua's kingdom. But for now, we're not to disturb them. We're not to go to war with them. We're to treat them as the Lord would treat them, with kindness. And he repeats this in verse 18. Today you are going to cross the border of Moab, but when you come close to the Ammonites, do not harass or provoke them, because I am not giving you any of the Ammonites' land as your possession. I have already given it to Lot's descendants as their possession. Now, Lot was called a righteous man, and I believe that that means the Lord intends to have Lot in his kingdom. And his kingdom is all of Greater Israel, and Lot gets a portion of that. And so, we're not to disturb the Ammonites either. Just like not disturbing the Edomites and the Moabites and the Ammonites. Well, guess who those people are today? They're in Jordan. We're to be kind to them. We're to not try to displace them or go to war with them. And in fact, I have to tell you that I have great respect for the Jordanians. Many of them are much kinder than Christians and Hebrews that I know. And this king, King Abdullah, he is to be respected. He is a good statesman. And so it says that you're not to displace these people. To this very day, he says in verse 25, this very day, I will begin to fill all the people of the earth with dread and to terrify them when they hear about you. They will shiver and shake in anticipation of your approach. That was a prophecy for them about to go over Jordan to displace the Canaanites and all the other ites on the west side of Jordan. This is also a prophecy for us in the end of days. You can see that the people are becoming more and more afraid of Israel all the time, and they're beginning to do everything they can to try to destroy Israel, from economic warfare to withholding military aid to the anti-Semitism against the Jews themselves, which is only a small part of what anti-Semitism really is, to destroying them, stabbings, car rammings, refusing to talk with them. You know, this week we had Abbas refused John Kerry's request to have a meeting between Abbas and Netanyahu. The whole earth is beginning to become afraid. Pharaoh and his people, they were afraid of the Hebrews. The whole earth is beginning to fulfill this prophecy again at the end of days. That's why we see the persecution of the Jews in Israel. And it's a persecution that is going to come to all of Israel. Who is all of Israel? All 13 tribes. Wherever you are in exile, believe me, you are not safe in your exile. You are only safe where the Lord told you to be. And I've done a teaching on that, so I don't need to review that right now. But the Lord says that they're coming for Israel. And so all of Israel are going to be persecuted. Even the house of Israel that is still committing its idolatry. The people of the earth, the rulers of the earth, they're not going to distinguish between Christians and Jews. In the future, they're not going to distinguish between Christians, Hebrews, and Jews in the future. And they're beginning to get afraid of us. This is why we need to walk softly among the Moabites, the Ammonites, and the Edomites. Now we're going to talk about King Sihon of Heshbon. He says, I sent messengers from the Kedemoth desert to King Sihon of Heshbon with an offer of peace. Let me pass through your land. I will keep strictly to the roadway. I will not turn aside to the left or to the right or the left. Sell me food for cash so that I can eat and sell me water to drink. Just allow me to go through on foot, just as the descendants of Esau who live at Seir and the Moabites who live in Ar did for me. By the way, we don't read in this last few Torah portions where the descendants of Esau let them buy food and water and pass through their territory, and neither did the Moabites, did they? The Moabite king tried to have them destroyed by Balaam. So what is this? This is a prophecy. At the end of days, it is prophesied that the descendants of Esau and the Moabites are going to sell food and water and allow the people to go through on foot, because he's talking here about the prophecy of the safe territories. But King Sihon of Heshbon was unwilling to allow us to pass near him, because the Lord our God had made him obstinate and stubborn, so that he might deliver him over to you this very day. And the Lord said, look, I have already begun to give over Sihon and his land to you. Start right now to take possession of his land. So we need to take a look at this territory, because apparently the prophecy says that this area where King Sihon was and this area at the end of days are still going to be inhospitable to the Lord's people. Well, King Sihon's area was up in the northern part of what we now call Jordan, and it was on the east side of what we call the Sea of Galilee. It's in northern Jordan. Now, it makes sense to me that this is a prophecy about the end of days as much as it was a situation, a condition of these people's time, because I have heard of reports of people like me and other Christians who are not welcome in that part of Jordan. And so the Lord has made him obstinate up there, so that eventually when Yeshua returns, he's going to deliver this area to the kingdom. And he says in verse 31, look, I have already begun to give over Sihon and his land to you. Start right now to take his land as your possession. When Sihon and all his troops emerged to encounter us in battle at Jahaz, the Lord our God delivered him over to us, and we struck him down along with his sons and everyone else. Prophecy. At that time, we seized all his cities and put every one of them under divine judgment, including the women and children. We left no survivors. From down in verse 36, from Aroer, which is the edge of Wadi Arnon, all the way to Gilead, there was not a town able to resist us. The Lord our God gave them all to us. However, you did not approach the land of the Ammonites, the Yabok, the cities of the hill country, or any place else forbidden by the Lord. Now, again, you know, the language here is you did not, as in past tense. So it's telling us here that this also is prophetic of the end of days. They set out on the route to Bashan. King Og of Bashan and his whole army came out to meet us in battle at Edrei. The Lord said, don't be afraid of him. I have already given him, his whole army, and his land to you. You will do to him exactly what you did to King Sihon of the Amorites who lived in Heshbon. So the Lord our God did indeed give over King Og. You know, when I say that the language is revealing that it's prophecy, it means because what happened back there is going to happen again. And so if we are reading here what's happening to this second generation, which is the type and foreshadow of the last generation, we need to understand that this is what the last generation can expect, to have all these wars and various difficulties in the end of days during the Great Tribulation. And the exhortation at the end of this Torah portion is the same for us as it was for them. Verse 22, do not be afraid of them, for the Lord your God will personally fight for you. Do not do what the 10 spies did. Do not do what that first generation that was destroyed in the wilderness did. Do not commit that kind of whoredom, that zenuth, that idolatry. Do not do that. That kind of fear comes out of the soil of idolatry. Don't be afraid of them, for the Lord your God will personally fight for you. By the way, the Lord your God will fight for you personally. This is a promise that we can count on. We can count on the Lord going before us into battle during these end times. So let us be strengthened. Let us be heartened. The Lord will go before us in battle, and there are so many of us, they can't kill us all. We're as numerous as the sands of the sea. He has shown us this in the DNA of the, tens of thousands of families all over the earth. We have nothing to fear. Let us put our faith and hope and trust. Let us stop saying, the land is defiled. The land has too many giants in it. The land has, this or that wrong with it. Let's stop that idolatry and let's stop being afraid. And let's go forward and prepare to take back our inheritance. I hope this Torah portion has been a blessing to you. Please give all honor, glory, and praise to the one to whom all honor, glory, and praise belongs, our Messiah and our King, our current and our soon returning King, Yeshua. Shabbat Shalom.